Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. Welcome back to another season of the Global Development Primer podcast. And for this first episode of this season, we're happy to have two very special guests join us to talk about a new book project that has just been released. We have Isabel Guerrero join us, who's an economist, a psychoanalyst, and a co-founder of Imago Global Grassroots, which helps organizations scale up. Now, since 2014, she has taught the course Scaling Up and Systems Change for Development Impact. And that's at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Now, prior to this, Isabel worked for 30 years at the World Bank, including 5 years as vice president for the South Asia region. She holds a master's degree from the London School of Economics and graduated from the Washington Psychoanalytic Institute. And we also have Siddhant Golke join us as a knowledge manager at Imago Global Grassroots, where he built the knowledge function. He co-authored a recent theoretical paper on the adaptive evaluation methodology, and he also advises Imago's evaluation projects. He previously worked at the Behavioral Development Lab, establishing a JPAL South Asia's first project in the state of Goa. He holds a master's degree in public administration and international development from the Harvard Kennedy School and an MA in economics from Columbia University. So Isabel and Siddhant, welcome to GDP.
Hi, Robert. Thank you very much for having us.
Yep. Thanks so much for having us.
It's a real pleasure. And I just want to dive right into it to tell us about your work, your new book. What is Scaling Up Development? What have you put together for this?
So should I start? Yes. So, well, this book is really the product of teaching a course for 10 years on scaling up. And then also working with organizations that through Imago on scaling up. So it starts with, you know, a framework, but this framework has been road tested with many organizations around the world. So we know that it works, that it's quite adaptive from, you know, private sector to grassroots to government. And so the book is pulling together all that knowledge that we're building on, you know, other people who have been working on this for more than 10 years and integrating all that work and doing it in a way that is friendly, that is easy to understand. You don't need an economic degree to understand it. And it guides you with questions to help organizations who are thinking of scaling up or trying to understand why they are not scaling up. The book is designed to help them as well.
So that's great. Yes, Siddhant, please go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add to what Isabel said. So on your question of what do we mean by scaling up development impact? So I thought I could provide a little bit of maybe step back and like bring in a bit of the motivation of the book. So I think what Isabel, I think, observed in her career first working at scale at the World Bank and then with the grassroots at Imago was this pattern of in which a lot of the big development institutions like multilateral organizations, aid agencies, governments that are often backed by development experts, their programs and projects, one of the difficulties with them is it's difficult to reach the needy and disadvantaged, especially in complex areas of frontline service delivery. And there are many reasons for that, right? So maybe capacity constraints or lack of incentives as programs trickle down and so on and so forth. And at the same time, there's so many extraordinary local initiatives and innovations by NGOs, by civil service organizations, often championed by people who are closest to the problem, but they only very rarely scale. And so especially relative to the size of the problem. And so this is something we conceptualize as the missing middle, where top-down solutions, you know, find it difficult to reach the last mile, while bottom-up solutions rarely scale. And so we see scaling up development impact as really about addressing this missing middle. And incidentally, the mission of Imago, where both of us work, is also about, which is co-founded by Isabel, as you said, is really about trying to take these grassroots innovation to scale. And so when we say scaling up development, we mean we're referring to a process that leads to sustainable impact. But I think the key is to that it affects a large and increasing population of the relevant need. And so, as Isabel said, the book is really all about scaling up from a framework to conceptualizing it, understanding why it's difficult, what are the pathways to scale, what are some tools to accompany the scaling up process. And so hopefully that gives some context.
No, that's great. And, you know, I myself have been witness to and, you know, worked with even at arm's length some of the projects that have wrestled with this issue as well. I'm thinking just in the healthcare sector where, you know, you'll have sort of a top-down approach saying we need a hospital in this town in a rural part of a country. And, you know, it's all proposed and all the budget lines get crossed off and the project goes ahead. And then 3 years later, the soil isn't even turned to build construction. And then the other side of it, you might have some of the most innovative community level health promotion and disease prevention programs that are making wonderful transitions of health at the local level, but they just can't seem to bite in to get the resources to make it more sustainable. So what is it about scaling up development that causes these challenges? Is it a communication issue? Is it not having the right people in the right place? Where do you see the challenges to this coming from?
So it's a whole set of things. That's why scaling up is so difficult. Actually, chapter two is about why is it so difficult to scale up. It's because it's a transformation. And it's also because it's a whole value chain of aspects that need to be right in order to be able to scale up. So we usually first start by having a clarity of vision. Some organizations don't have that, or at least this founder has it, but not the rest of the organization. Then we look at why hasn't the system developed that or scaled that solution? Because many of these solutions are already there, but they are not scaling. So understanding the system dynamics of why that happens, and then really going into the model. And the model has three parts. One is the technical part of the model, so an innovation that solves a specific problem. The second one is the business model. How is this innovation going to be scaled? How is it going to be financed? Sometimes it could be 100% grants, sometimes it could be 100% market, but having that clarity of what is that business model that is going to allow you to generate the revenue that eventually you will be able to reinvest in scaling to the next level. And the third, for social impact, very important, was your theory of change. And is that theory of change, which in the end it's a theory, is that theory of change really providing the impact that you intended to provide through your organization? So many organizations, most of the ones that we work with, the work is at that level, at those three dimensions of the model. Many have a very clear set of interventions that will give that result. And in that sense, we work on what's the minimum viable intervention, meaning if you want to scale, you cannot scale an innovation with all the bells and whistles that you want, that you have in your organization. Sometimes to scale it, you need to really make it leaner and, you know, so that others can also scale. And then the second, of course, as I said, is the business model and the theory of change. And it's a whole process from design to implementation, to scale, to sometimes replicating with others and understanding the capacity of others to replicate. Sometimes having an innovation that is coming from a social enterprise and having the government scale, then there's a whole adaptation that needs to happen. So that's why scaling up doesn't usually happen. And as you were saying, Robert, there are many organizations that have amazing solutions, and we have met many of them and work with them. And the pathway to scale is full of challenges.
And yet those challenges, you know, they're old. They've they've been around for a while. Yet one of the arguments in your book, Scaling Up Development, is that this is mission critical. That term is used that now today, 2024, that to scale up development is at a mission critical point. What do you mean by that?
You want to come in, Sid, or should I come in?
Yeah, no, I think we see it as, maybe I can start, Isabel, and then you can continue. So I think what we mean by that is we see this as so central. So when we look at UN's sustainable development goals for 2030, and you know, while we have made significant strides in poverty reduction, whether it's in terms of income capabilities or even, as Amartya Sen would say, in terms of freedoms, there's still many big development challenges out there, right? In terms of amenities, in terms of literacy. And while existing solutions, even though they're existing solutions, not many scale. And so to reach these sustainable development goals, scale is just absolutely essential, right? Understanding scale is essential. And there's a lot of, the world is littered with pilots, some successful, some not. But understanding what it takes to scale is crucial. And I think like the book tries to go into what are the right questions to ask to scale. And there are also a few broad themes, I think, that emerge as lessons, not so much from our experiences and from lived organizational experiences. And I think one of them is putting people at the center of the solution, not seeing those who are closest to the problem or the experience as mere spectators, but also as actively participating and co-creating the solutions. And time again, we have seen organizations and solutions that scaled have a component of involving the people who are closest to the problem as active participants. So that's one element. I think another big theme in the book, which we go into, is this aspect of adaptation, experimentation, and learning. And I think that's closely related to my contribution in the book. But it's the idea that scaling up really requires, it's a different science. It's not the science of whether something works, but how something works and how can we take something that works in a particular entity, organization, or context into a different entity, organization, or context, right? And that inherently involves some adaptation, some learning. And even if you remain in the same context, you know, the world is so complex, the environment, economy is constantly evolving. And so organizations that have a culture of learning that are okay to fail, right? That inculcate this idea of not only, you know, gathering evidence, but using evidence to inform their decisions and the design of the intervention, are the ones that, you know, are able to scale. And it's one of the big lessons of the book. And the third part, which I think I hinted to, is on systems. We really see scaling up as about navigating systems and understanding systems. And so those are some of the lessons that I think that emerge from the book on what it takes to scale and what it means to match solutions to the relevant, to the size of the relevant problem.
So in trying to pursue this, are there some, maybe we should call them shocks that get involved? Is it like I'm wondering how things like conflict or instability in a democracy, for example, does that also put these shocks, these wrinkles in the ability to scale up or to transfer ideas and technology within development?
So I actually, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think that these moments of crisis many times represent accelerators of very successful disruptions. I think a lot of the unicorns came out of the 2008 crisis. It was a huge disruption that brought about the incubation of new ideas that we now see as very established companies. I think COVID is going to be one of, when we look back a few years down the line, we're going to also think it's one of these moments. There's moments in which the system in which an innovation needs to scale is already starting to show that it It needs a disruption from outside the system for that innovation to scale. And something like COVID, a shock which is so prolonged and so deep and so complex, means that the system is not as resilient to respond to this shock, and therefore innovations that can scale become possible. And so I think the whole, for example, the whole move to working so much more virtually is going to help organizations that were unable to scale. It has helped us, Imago. In Imago, we used to be face-to-face with many clients. So our capacity to support clients had to do with getting on a plane and being in different continents at the same time. With COVID, we were able to be on Monday in Kenya, on Tuesday in India, on Wednesday in Chicago. And so I'm sure that happened with many organizations, and you will see eventually that these disruptions really, really help. Conflict is a different story in the sense that conflict, of course, it depends on the level, but it sometimes can be so depleting that what I think conflict activates is one of the most important parts of systems change. I'm overly hopeful, which is the mental shifts. When we think about systems change, usually we're thinking about policies. But if we go beyond that, there are stronger levers for system change. One of them is power relations, personal relations. But the biggest lever is on mental models, shifting mental models. And many of, for example, climate change activism, Black Lives Matters, peace activism are important parts of society helping raise awareness of these issues and helping with that mental shift. So that's why I think in these times, you see so much innovation that then scales. I don't know if that helps, Robert. I went a bit, too far into the systems, but let me know if you need me to clarify a bit more.
No, I think that's great. And I guess what I'd like to know, that this is clearly a teachable topic. It's something that, no matter what approach an instructor or an organization takes to development, this topic would need to be included. So I'm just curious that in the book, what sort of tools do you offer your readers about this process of scaling up? What are some of the takeaways and tools that come from it?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Sid to come in, but I'll start because I think he has the most to contribute in terms of the tools. But what we do is we have questions. Questions are very powerful tools because we know, as Sid was saying, that if we think about the development challenge as a personified in somebody at the center who's a human being, they have a lot of knowledge. One of the biggest learnings for me working in the World Bank for years is that we need to shift about thinking as the poor as a problem, but that and recipients of aid, but actually thinking about the poor, about agents of change. They know what the answers are to these problems, but the questions are really helpful. So most of our tools in the first part of the book are about asking the right questions, are about helping people think about how to map a system, how to bring the stakeholders, and sort of a very simple way to tap into this very rich local knowledge of the people who are closest to the problem. And then I'm going to pass on to Sid, who then developed a whole set of tools to accompany this process. So Sid, over to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think as Isabel was saying, a lot of the approach of the book is about asking the right questions as opposed to prescribing answers. I think the other element in the tools is we take inspiration and try to bridge multiple disciplines, whether it's from economics, psychology, design thinking, and so on and so forth. And a lot of the tools are developed from organizational experiences, whether it's from Pratham, who has built a wonderful learning organization, and we wrote a case study on that. There are examples, the book mentions Pratham and its learning journey, or BRAC, which in Bangladesh has done amazing work. And so if we were to, I guess, the big picture of the tools in the book is that we begin with the scaling up framework, which I think Isabel began to describe. It includes aspects of the vision, whether it's the system, the model, the foundation or scaffolding of scaling, and evidence, which is important throughout. And that is very much in terms of questions of asking one, what is the vision? What is the gap? What is the pressing need? What it is in the system that needs to change? Why is the system reproducing the problem? But also, why haven't solutions to scale emerged, right? And one of the questions we ask about the system that I think is very related is, as an organization, do you have to, are you scaling within an existing system and how it operates, or are you trying to scale to, do you need to change the system in order to scale? The model goes into, you know, the specificities of making the solution work, and the foundation is all about operations and making the solution reach its intended impact through building an organization or transferring to another organization. So that's one set of tools is on scaling up. There are a set of tools that I think are in the private sector chapter on implementation, on adaptive implementation. And here we go into the worlds of design thinking, of human-centered design, of agile management, which we take huge inspiration from in the private sector. Now, these tools are, of course, applied heavily in the private sector, but need to be adapted to the development context. But I think there's a lot to learn in these iterative cycles of learning, of putting the user at the center, of testing, of prototyping, of using lessons from prototyping into learning. So there's these adaptive management techniques that we use. And then the last piece, which I was most involved in, is adaptive evaluation, which we see as a journey of meaning making throughout the scaling process. And so roughly it involves system-based approaches. And we have a lot of tools for system-based approaches, from systems mapping to actor, you know, stakeholder mapping, even system dynamics. Then their theory-based approaches is to build a theory of change from within this, from the system, build a theory of change of how this intervention will impact the final outcome, and then to iteratively test, and we use a technique called process tracing to test hypotheses within this. But the big picture of adaptive evaluation, and I think the book goes into a lot of detail, is that evaluation is the journey throughout the scaling up process. Evidence is needed in every stage of scaling, from like early stage piloting to even understanding the problem to eventually intermediate scaling or scaling at, you know, at the highest levels of scale, whether it be a country or a state or internationally. The other piece I think that is important is to be really open-minded with techniques and to change the tools you use based on the stage you're scaling up. So, you know, the tools used for intermediate scaling will be very different from the tools used when you're in early stage piloting, where in early stage piloting, for example, quick feedback, quick insights is more important than maybe rigor, whereas later on, rigorous demonstration of what works and doesn't is probably more paramount. And in later stages of scaling, when you're transferring or replicating, understanding, you know, systems becomes even more crucial. So that's just one demonstration, but also time, cost, and resource considerations, and also the level of complexity and the kind of questions we're trying to answer. And I think underlying all of this, I think the deeper level is really about a culture of learning, right? So creating an environment in which finding that something doesn't work isn't problematic, but is part of the journey. And so the three tools are really about scaling up itself, on implementation, and on evaluation. So those are roughly the tools we go into, and we give examples of organizations and some of Imago's work within it.
Oh, thank you, Sinan. That's a great run through there. So thank you very much for that. And I think, you know, the way you're framing this is that it's not just about the questions that need to be asked. It's what types of questions and how we also get people, the students, practitioners, whoever it is, engaged in this topic, asking the right questions in a way that can see these results through. So I think your book is going to be an important tool, and one that I know I'll be teaching some large classes in the fall that have, I guess, suddenly scaled up in their own way. But you know, this might be on the reading list. So I just want to thank you, Sedan, and give it over to Isabel for any last words before we wrap up this episode.
Oh, thank you so much. I love your image of your course that has scale up, which is courses do scale up, and you know how to keep the students engaged and how to keep the quality of the learning is a real challenge. So good luck with your course, and thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much. It was great to be on the podcast.
Thanks very much, folks. We will catch you again next time, I'm sure.
Great.